Look at the hens, the sky, the towering pines. This is your world, full of beauty, and you are a part of it too, connected to all this life. That rifle, it doesn't define you. That's not what you're connected to. That one moment isn't who you are. Your flesh and blood and everything you love. Everything you love and everyone who loves you. No one should love her. Certainly not Dev after she shut him down. Okay, her father, yeah. He almost had to love her. She pushed aside the dark thought and tried to think of the moment, like her father told her to. Right now, the pleasant cool air and the weight of the corn in her lap. The silk of the ears of corn stuck to her fingers, fresh and full of sweetness.
Looks like good corn, Kurt said.
She looked up to find him watching her from the bottom of the steps. Come on up. You on watch?
Just finished my last sweep. It's quiet out there. Hope it stays that way for a while.
I can't agree more. Kick those husks out of the way and have a seat.
Thank you.
He took the chair next to her. Want a drink? Some raw corn?
I'll pass on both, except for a taste of a kernel.
She handed him the ear she was working on. He pulled out a knife and neatly popped off a kernel, then guided it to his mouth on his knife blade.
Good, he said. I'd help you do this, but my hands are filthy.
You have your own garden to tend to. It's sort of soothing, actually, sitting here and picking off the silk.
You have your water boiling yet?
Should I?
Not if you're not ready to eat. But corn is better if you get the water boiling, then pick it, clean it, and toss it right in. It's sweetest of all if you do it that way.
I'm sure it'll be fine. We're having tomatoes and corn and baked potatoes. No meat tonight. Would you like to stay for supper anyway?
No, but I would like to say something.
Okay, she said.
I'm glad you're feeling better.
She dropped her gaze and focused on the corn. When he didn't add anything for several seconds, she said, I didn't know it showed.
It did to me. You were upset when you came back from Payson, and it got worse for several days. And now you're on the mend. Not mended 100%, but on the mend, I think.
It's a relief to hear I am, she said, finishing pulling the last few bits of silk off. She tossed the clean ear in the big cook pot sitting by her feet, full of cool well water.
Looks like not a single bug got to these, he said.
Pilar really has a green thumb. Do you plant a fall crop?
I did, though smaller than the rest of yours.
I guess none of us ever goes up your way to look.
No reason to.
And reasons not to. No one wants to disturb the hermit. She managed to smile at him to show she meant nothing bad by it. How did you know I was upset?
Part of being a hermit, he said.
That doesn't make sense. A hermit isn't around people, so he'd be confused by everything about people, right?
Maybe hermit is the wrong word. I've spent years on the outside of things. I don't get invited into conversations much.
That worried her. Should we be inviting you more?
No, that's not what I meant. This increase in friendly neighbor stuff since oil ran out is about as much social time as I can take, honestly. Present company accepted.
She wasn't sure what that meant exactly, but she nodded as if she did. So how does being on the outside make you able to read my mind?
Well, it's not your mind I'm reading. It's your body. How you hold yourself. If your shoulders sag, the length of your stride, lines in your face. Well, not yours, because you're too young to have any lines to speak of. And where your eyes go.
Where my eyes go? She said. Usually they stay right here in my face. He smiled.
And that you're willing to make a joke.
It wasn't much of a joke, she said.
Still.
The chair creaked as he shifted on it.
When you're on the outside, you hide, but you watch. People think they are choosing not to talk to you, but they're talking. With every gesture, they're talking loud and clear.
Me too?
You especially.
She hoped he hadn't read a lot from her, but then again, she hoped he had. A part of her wanted to talk to him about killing Roy, and how she felt about it. She thought he'd be a good listener, a wise listener, with something useful to say. But she'd promised Pilar she'd keep the secret. They sat in companionable silence for a bit longer, and then he said,
"Well, I'm not prying. I know you don't want to talk now, but one day you might. If you ever need to talk, you know where to find me."
"I do. And thank you." She looked up from her work to give him a smile. It didn't feel unnatural, like a lot of her smiles had recently.
"I'll be right there."
"You're a good guy, Kurt. Being friends with you is the best thing to come out of all this. You know that?"
"So are you. A good person, I mean. You're able to reach out from whatever bad things you're feeling. And I can tell you're still feeling them. And be kind to me."
"Oh, that's the easy part," she said.
"Remember that about yourself," he said, "that you can be kind when you're hurting."
And he got up and left. She went back to the corn, thinking about Kurt's visit, and what he'd said about listening in other ways than words. Maybe those were better ways, she realized. Maybe you heard more from that stuff, from watching, than you did from a person's mouth. People could lie. She was lying, lying through avoiding telling a truth. But he saw through that. Where was her father? Over at the Kershaws still, she supposed. She'd have food ready in less than an hour. She might have to run over there to get him while the water boiled. Her father wanted her to come to terms with what had happened in Payson, and forgive herself, and he seemed to want it today. He loved her, and she understood that was why he wanted it. But Sierra knew it would be a long road from where she was to where he wanted her to be. Maybe years would be spent on that road. She doubted she'd ever be able to travel as far down it as he'd like. That night in Payson had changed her. All the killing had changed her. She didn't know how exactly. Not yet. And she didn't know how much she'd be able to recapture the old Sierra. She would try, though. She would really and truly try. Chapter 25 10 days later, Pilar was in the garden hoeing, the same thing he'd been doing all Sierra's life. Kelly was nominally on watch, walking through the woods from time to time. But they agreed that didn't need to be the level of watch it once had been. Not with Payson on their side, and the neighbors down the hill watching the road as well. A cross-country attack was more likely now, so a watch included a couple of circuits of their perimeter, nothing more. Sierra had just gone through their supplies in the barn to see what they might be willing to trade next time they met with the other neighbors, Wes's people, and she'd talk her selections over with Pilar later. Arch and Dev were up the hill with a box of jury-rigged grenades. They were going to blow up the road 20 miles from here to make approach from that direction harder. Arch had explained it at their last neighborhood trade-in discussion meeting with Wes's group.
"I'm pretty sure we can remove all the asphalt, and if we can leave a ditch too wide to cross with a vehicle, all the better."
The representatives of the other neighborhood had agreed it was a good plan. Payson wasn't consulted. But they'd be told on November 1st, the next trip down there. Any attack from now on would probably come from the woods, and they all felt that a battle in the woods gave them the advantage. The more they patrolled it, the better they knew it, each root that might trip them, each solid tree trunk, the trees that might be climbed. Arch had invited Sierra to come along for the demolition of the road, but she had passed on the project. Her shooting Roy still haunted her. There was enough gunfire in her memory. She wanted time off from the sound of explosions. Her only role in the demolition was to drive up and bring them back in another hour. Arch and Dev had each driven up an invader's car, the two largest they had, and after they blew up the road, they planned to park the two cars crossways, blocking the road further. Then they'd destroy the car's ability to move again, removing parts and removing two of the tires from each.
"It'll take heavy equipment or a small army to get through," Arch had said.
In his usual pessimistic way, he had added,
"If it's a small army, we're screwed anyway."
It still wouldn't stop people walking in from that direction, as everyone knew. But maybe strangers would think twice when they saw the destruction of the road. Pilar had said,
"You should shoot up the cars some before you leave. Make the message even clearer."
Arch had granted him a rare smile.
"That's the way, Crocker. You're getting in the swing of things."
And so the two Quinns were up there doing that, until she had to go retrieve them. Sierra went to the Kershaws to check on Misha's progress with training the dog. Joan and their newest neighbor, young Rod, were in their garden, Joan teaching him the difference between weeds and the new greens, just now coming up for the final growing season. Misha had been working at making the setter leave the chickens alone. Sierra found them around the front of the house and asked Misha to demonstrate how she'd progressed. A few minutes later, she watched as Jasper got a little too excited about the chickens on the other side of the fence and lunged for them. Misha tugged on the leash and said,
"Bad dog, no."
"Like you mean it," Sierra called. She grabbed an empty fruit crate from by the garden fence, turned it over, and sat on it.
"No, Jasper."
The girl wasn't a natural disciplinarian. Not yet, anyway. Hard to say what the future would make of her. It had made something different of Sierra than she had planned on being, that was for sure.
"When are the babies going to get born?"
Misha said, growing bored with the chore and running over to Sierra.
"The baby chickens, I mean."
"Oh, gosh. I'm not sure about yours."
"And they hatch, not get born."
"Soon."
"Are there still 10 eggs? Maybe we need to check again."
"We need to leave that poor hen alone. The eggs are fine. She's safely inside her own box, so the other chickens won't hurt the chicks when they hatch. Now we just need to wait."
"Can we candle one?"
Sierra shook her head.
"They won't look like anything now. The eggs are stuffed with baby chick. All you'd see is dark."
"Not the lines?" She meant the blood vessels, which had fascinated her when Sierra had taught her how to candle.
"Nope. Those are squished up against the chick. The whole egg is full to almost bursting, and soon it will, when the chick decides to peck its way out."
"Cross your heart?"
"Cross my heart," she said, and did so.
Jasper came over and nosed at her, and accepted a pat. Jasper had finally taken to the females on the road, but she was still leery of all the men, though she tolerated Pilar within a few feet, as long as he didn't reach for her. Sierra wondered what had happened to the dog to make her like that. Something a long time ago? Something when her owners died or fled? Whatever it was, the dog wasn't telling any tales. Neither was Sierra. And neither was Emily, who still hadn't spoke. Sierra glanced back at the house and was surprised to see Emily standing there on the deck, watching them. Sierra smiled and waved. Then she turned her attention back to Misha.
"So you'll leave the brooding hen alone, right?"
"Okay," she said, pouting. But only for an instant. She had a sunny disposition by nature, and a lot of energy, which she proved by unclipping Jasper's leash and taking off toward the woods.
"Chase me!" she screamed. "Come on, girl! Don't go farther than where you can see the house," Sierra called. "Remember the animal traps!"
They all felt safer, yes, but they might never be entirely safe, and the woods still had dangers of its own, like the traps and bears and coyotes and mountain lions. Misha didn't stop running until Jasper caught up to her and jumped on her. They both hit the ground, rolling, and Misha jumped up a second later, laughing. A tap on her shoulder startled her. She turned. It was Emily. She held out a folded piece of paper. Sierra said,
"For me?"
Emily nodded.
Sierra took the paper, and as soon as she had it, Emily dropped her hold and ran back for the house. Sierra heard the back door slam. She unfolded the paper. Emily had drawn daisies on it, and hearts, and there was a drawing of Sierra with her rifle, and her hair flying around her head as if caught by a strong wind. Above her portrait was the word thank, and below it, you. Sierra felt tears build behind her eyes. Maybe not everything she'd done with her rifle was a bad thing. Not everything. She stood and turned back to the house and waved the piece of paper. Then she folded it carefully and pressed it over her heart. She knew Emily was watching her.
You're welcome,
she said, even though she knew the girl couldn't hear her. Maybe Emily was on the mend, and that gave her hope. Everyone would heal from their wounds, maybe even Sierra herself. There was time to breathe now, time to grieve what had been lost and build for a better future. In the winter, when the last harvest was in, there'd be time for her to learn new skills, like baking from Kelly, bow hunting from Arch, trapping from Kurt, and servicing the turbines from her dad. She'd write it all down, make her own how-to books to replace what had been lost with the internet. Books that Mishun, Emily, and Rod might need one day. She'd build something in this world. Something of use. Not just kill. She wasn't going to turn herself in for what she'd done in Payson. But she could atone for it by being better. By building more than she tore down. Today, she believed that everything would get better. Maybe not immediately, maybe not forever. There might be hard times ahead, more grief and more regrets. But there might be joys, too. Moments of hard laughter and celebration that she could feel again, the way she'd felt gratitude right now for Emily's note. For now, this was enough. Life was settled, and all was well. This concludes Bled Dry by Lou Cadle, narrated by Cody Roberts. Copyright 2017 by Cadle Sparks Books. This unabridged audiobook is published by arrangement with Cadle Sparks Books and was produced in the year 2018 by Tantor Media Incorporated, a division of Recorded Books, which holds the copyright thereto. Please visit Tantor.com for more information on our growing library of unabridged audiobooks.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.